Show me that smile again.
Show me that smile.
Don't waste another minute on you crying.
Hi, everybody. This is Kirk Cameron. I'm here to tell you about why the banana is the vehicle for God's love.
Have you ever really looked at the human eye?
Boo, 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 boo. We got the world spinning right in our hands, baby, you and me. Gotta be the luckiest dreamers that never quit dreaming.
I'm Alan Thicke. I don't have anything to say. I just wanted to do my Alan Thicke impression. Boy, isn't Canada great? I'm Jody Sweetin. What am I doing here?
Sharing the laughter and love.
Sharing the laughter and love.
Hi, I'm the head of Vox Media Law. We would like to formally apologize for our infringement of multiple copyrights and the impersonations of many different individuals.
It's fine if we discuss them editorially.
Those things suck.
Those impressions were bad. There.
That song is also my favorite sea shanty from Assassin's Creed 4.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best thing of the week.
Hey guys, Griffin here. I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Russ Frostick, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in sports, Twitter, Twitter apps, Twitter fashion, Twitter etiquette, and movies. But this week it's just all about games. We're bringing it back to just a game-centric episode.
Can we talk a little bit about Twitter fashion? Because I'm like interested to hear like what that is and
a
means.
Lot of people right now are switching their Twitter icons and names to something a little more Yuletide-y.
Yeah, I hate that.
I don't like it either.
It confuses.
I did it and Chris did it, but.
It's really obnoxious. Like, every fucking holiday needs its own, like, Flag Day's coming up. I'm Russ Flag Tick.
Well, that's actually not bad.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Could have turned out way worse.
Mine's a horrifying image from Christmas Kisses, which is just a old bearded man head emerging from a present, which suits me just fine, but it is upsetting.
Is it like Ghoulies where he's coming out of the toilet, but it's a present?
Every time I see it, it still kind of upsets me. Everybody should go by there and just, follow me real quick. Twitter.
He's A plus K is his name.
let's talk about some of the best things that's going on in games right now. You know, the year's winding down, so the major releases have died off as the Christmas rush has passed us by.
We down in the dregs now. We in the soup.
A lot of big, a lot of fun... worthwhile indie games still coming down the pike, and smaller titles, et cetera, et cetera. So we still got some stuff to talk about.
Who wants to start us up proper?
Not me. Not it.
Yeah, let's pick a big name release.
I'll pick a. How about Dragon Age? You guys remember that franchise?
Whoa,
vaguely.
Yeah, not a big deal. EA Fantasy, R.A. Salvador. He didn't have anything to do with that, but he. He's a big name in fantasy. Dragon Age is back, better than ever. Kind of, not really, though. In Heroes of Dragon Age, it's a portable mobile release for phones and tablets. I was dismayed that it wasn't just a direct port of the Facebook Dragon Age game. Y'all remember that, little Diddy?
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty god.
It was pretty god, as Justin just said. That was a decent little title. A lot of turn-based strategy, team-building shit going on there. Heroes of Dragon Age, not so much into that. I called it the best gashapon machine of 2013, although that's probably not even true because Super Stickman Golf 2 had a sweet little gashapon machine in there, too.
Would you like to explain what a gachapon machine is for people who don't know?
A capsule toy machine, I guess, if you're a dullard.
I think people probably still don't know what that is.
Like at a supermarket, you put a quarter in it and you get a thing out.
Okay, now they know.
Got it.
I just figured, like, it's been in so many, like, Shenmue and that the Zelda Game Boy Color games, like...
What? Really?
Yeah, sure. The gacha tree? You don't remember that shit?
No, anyway, not really. Let's
we're so distracted. Heroes of Dragon Age is so goddamn infuriating because it has all of these elements that could make it a spectacular mobile role-playing game, and it comes really, really, really close. It looks fucking fantastic. It looks absolutely tremendous, and to see, like, these characters in this world presented, like, beautifully... like bar none, one of the better looking games, is so heartening, and then to watch the actual mechanics of the game fall so short is so disappointing. Basically,
so you're saying it does it well? Just before we get into the gameplay, does it look better than like Infinity Blade?
I don't know. I may be conflating like how much I dig the Dragon Age world and art style. Like it looks a lot like proper Dragon Age. And the character models are all beautiful, and there's a ton of them, because that's sort of the hook of the game, and why I referred to it as like a capsule machine, is you have this portal through which you summon these little statuettes of characters, and the characters have different stats, different things that they're good at.
Sounds
and
then like you, Skylanders.
You build a team. No, it's definitely not. You build a team with these characters, and you have a few options for boosting them. Like you can... cannibalize the characters you don't use to make your other ones stronger. You can
literally cannibalize them.
I don't know if it doesn't show what happens, but they probably do just unhinge their jaw and swallow the other person whole. Or if you get like two of the same kind, you can combine them to make like a stronger version of that unit. And then there's to its credit, a lot of strategy for how you build a team. So you have five slots on your team. One for like a big monster type unit that's like a special type that can only fill this one slot. And then the other four are organized into two in a front row and two in a back row. So the front row ones, you want to put like your big strong guys up there because they get a health bonus for being in the front. And the back row, you want like your heavier hitters, like your archers and magic people that can't take as much of a beating. And then attacks sort of break down into various ways, like some can attack the entire first row, some will attack in like a straight column. All of that said, there is like a lot of differentiation between the stats, between the different characters. There is a lot of consideration for how you put your team together in terms of speed and order and whether your team is like capable of stunning your opponent's big hitters so that you can knock them out without getting myrtle.
Gotta put some stunners in there.
You put a few icy hot stunners in there, and like you're on your way to being golden. What is a bummer?
I mean, all that sounded like a bummer to begin with.
Yeah, I'm already bummed.
Wow, really? See, that kind of shit's my jam though. Like team building and stat boosting and collecting through this capsule machine. Like all of that sounds really good to me because I guess I'm a fucking monster. Combat is 100% automated. You basically start the battle and then see what happens with the team that you've built.
So have you played Assassin's Creed 4?
Yeah.
So not you even, know that like even, mini game?
It's kind of like Kenway's Fleet, yes.
Okay.
A bit, I guess, maybe. Although there's a bit more depth to it than that. But even in Kenway's Fleet, you can drop those fire barrels, right? To sort of affect the... You don't even have that. Like, you just watch...
Watch the magic happen.
Watch what your dudes do. So, like, if you have a team of, like, super, super slow fighters in the first round, they might get, you know, weakened or wiped out to a point where they won't be able to come back. So, like, it's all... You put all the English on the ball in the menus, and then you just sort of watch the result, and it's so fucking disappointing because all that they needed was like one more little element of strategy that made you feel like you were in control of the battles,
yeah,
and it could have been like a super super deep like really solid mobile role-playing game. I think one of the reasons why it is so automated is because you can either choose to like follow along the quest where you play against AI components, or you can like matchmake against random people or play against your friends through Game Center. And all that shit is actually implemented really, really well. And it's asynchronous, so they don't have to be there when you fight them because it's all automated. Like, the battle's going to fucking turn out however it was going to turn out anyway. So, like, it's clearly built for that. But that kind of streamlined multiplayer doesn't really matter if the mechanics themselves aren't especially deep.
All you're doing is just watching it play out. It's almost like... You remember that scene in Searching for Bobby Fischer where Lawrence Fishburne and Ben Kingsley have to, like, watch on as the young Bobby Fischer wannabe is playing chess? And they're all like, dude, why are you pulling out your queen so early? That's not what you're supposed to do. But they can't say that out loud because that's against the rules of, like, chess rules.
Yeah,
so all they can do is just be like, right? I was in Gandhi. Like, So it
sounds like you really got a handle on this.
I was on the Pee-wee show, I totally get what you're saying, Russ. No, not really like that.
When you say it's more like building a D&D character sheet and then taking away the dice, because that's what it sounds like. Basically, like, throwing the dice is the fun part, like doing something and having the risk of your own mistakes or your own skill is enjoyable, not just like, oh, well, I've accumulated stats on my sheet, and, well, let me look at your sheet. Well, it looks like I'm better than you. You lose.
I mean, there is an
randomness, right?
There is an element of that, yes, because you know, you have a chance to do critical hits. You have the turn order is sort of abstract. Like, there are fast units, medium units, and slow units. So the fast units go first, but the order in which, like, all the fast units go, I haven't quite figured out how that breaks down. And, like, that sort of shit is actually very, very important. But, like, you can't make your fast unit defend. Like, it's just gonna do, you can't even choose who they fucking attack. Like, they just go for it. And whenever a battle's over, you don't feel this sense of accomplishment. Like, the tutorial has these few battles where you just get wiped off the map, like you just get murdered, and it says, oh, well, let's go buy a new guy, and then you buy a new guy and drop him in, and like, all right, now try again, and then you do it and win, and it's like, that was the fucking solution.
There,
like,
it is.
And there is some, you spend it like in-game gold to use the machine to get new dudes. It's not a machine, it's like a portal or whatever. But you can spend more gold to like guarantee your chance of getting a rarer unit. Or you can spend the infamous second form of currency, to get like a super rare unit, and you'll get that second currency drop by drop by drop by playing through like expert challenges in the game, or you can just fucking buy them, or you can just like spend your real ass money on them.
But I don't know why anyone would buy anything in this game, because it sounds so boring that it's like, oh yay, I can play this elite unit in this boring strategy game.
I mean, there is something to be said about the fact that you have all this, like, all these customization options, and you have, like, your ability to build a team is very thorough, and there are a lot of ways to upgrade that team, and, like, that shit is very rewarding, but, like, that might do it for some people.
Yeah. But like, all you can do is just, like, watch it all play out, like Pat Morita
in the end
of Karate Kid, when Daniel-san goes out there, like, he's gonna get kicked in the ass by the Cobra Kai. All Pat Morita can do is watch the horror play out.
Yeah.
So here's the thing I hate about in-app purchases, because I want to say this really quick, and it's another stupid metaphor, do you remember, like, did you guys collect Pogs as a kid?
Sure.
I loved collecting Pogs, and if you don't know what they are, they were the top of old glass milk bottles, but then they became like this whole like
fruit juice
thing.
Actually,
there
were
little
fruit
circles
juice
of cardboard, whatever. The point is, there were little circles of cardboard, and you collect them, and then you would, like, trade them with friends and gradually accumulate, like, rare Pogs. And that was fun. That was, like, a fun thing to do with your friends, because, you know, it was interactive, and you gradually got what you wanted, and you didn't always get what you wanted. But there was always one kid who was, like, this asshole with all the money in the world who would come and look at your collection, and then either buy them from you and your friends, or just go into the store and buy everything all at once. And it totally ruined it for everyone else, because it was like, well, it's not fun anymore. That kid has the best collection. I will never be able to compete with that. And, like, I can't even resist just, like, giving my stuff to him because he'll just buy it off me. And that's what pretty much everything I've been playing on mobile feels like lately, where it's like, just to compete, I can either dedicate my entire life to grinding this thing, or spend money, and you know, there will always be people who are out there willing to spend more money.
How do you make the decision?
I can't get into it.
How do you make the decision on whether or not you're going to spend money on a game?
Like a free-to-play game?
Yeah.
I don't.
No, that's not true. I
did recently, and I hated myself for it.
If I play a game like Tiny Tower for hours and hours on end, I'll give them like money.
Yeah, that's typically how I kind of. I paid for something in Super Stickman Golf 2.
I thought that was a game that actually cost money, though, and then you paid for more stuff.
What?
Super Stickman Golf. It's like a $2.99 game, and there's like DLC. I think there's a difference between like downloadable content and in-app. I wish there was better terms for this, because there is such a difference between, you know, like more levels than like, hey, you don't have to grind anymore. We made it purposely boring, so
my issue with this game, my issue with this game is less that it's pay to win, because really that term really is only going to matter to you in this game if you do a lot of the PvP shit, which you don't have to. Like, there's a big long quest mode full of like Dragon Age-y lore shit. My problem is that like there are like 5 different tiers of rarity for these figures to fall into, and each step you move up, like, those heroes beat the ever-loving shit out of the level before. Like, it's not even fucking close. So, like, when you get a low-rarity character, it's not like, oh, good, I have this one for my collection. It's like, well, fuck, like, this guy obviously sucks. Like, it's a bad RPG problem of, like, getting new things and having it be, like, the opposite of a reward almost. Like, you just see that guy and you think, like, well, I'm going to have one of my other guys eat him. Like, fucking cool. I don't know. It's just, it's kind of the opposite of the sort of reward structure that role-playing games usually go for. Anyway, it's just so fucking frustrating because I haven't played, like, a good role-playing game on mobile for a while. And it's because of this shit that just fucking kills me. Like, they make it look amazing, sound amazing, all this presentation work into it to make it, like, look like a AAA-ass game. And then they just, like, make it so shitty. Make it better.
just make it better.
It's not that fucking hard. And then, like, I play games that are really, really good and have all these really great, you know, mechanics that just look like dog shit because they don't have the full power of EA leaning behind them. Like, make a good fucking game, guys.
Nope, you can blame one game, and it's The Simpsons Tapped Out.
Even The Simpsons tapped out.
Moneymaker, and now everyone's trying to rip it off. They all want that sort of cash.
It's a different time.
Good game cash.
It's a different thing, though, right? Because I'm not going to say that Simpsons Tapped Out is a bad game. Like, it has a simulation thing that people dig. I play the fuck out of Heyday. I'm not afraid to admit it. But, like, role-playing games are so underserved because everybody's afraid to put, like, a fucking turn-based menu in that shit. Do it. I swear to God. And it's not going to scare people away to choose shit from a menu.
People, like, love that Pokemon.
People love them Pokemons. It just drives me up a wall, man.
I'm sorry. Nintendo should release Pokemon on mobile.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, should I bring the next thing?
Yeah, please.
I'm ready.
Sure. Okay. So, you guys heard about this game, Kentucky Route Zero, right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, yep. So for those that don't know about it, real quick, it's like a point-and-click adventure set in kind of the South with some really weird themes, and everything's a little stranger than you'd expect it to be. Kind of like, like Cronenberg meets Lynch meets Twilight Zone meets...
With bad graphics.
Really weird graphics. I love them. I think it's a beautiful game.
No, I think
you know what the graphics remind me of is Out of This World.
Another World, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Um, So it's great. And when I say point-and-click adventure, I don't usually like that stuff. There's none of those dumb puzzles that get in the way of those sorts of games. It just has a really interesting way of getting you from point A to point B that I just eat it up. But you're probably like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that. That sounds like a gamble, and I don't want to spend, I think it's like $15 for the entire season of games, five in all, I believe. Well, guess what? They make interludes, and they're free, and they're kind of tangentially connected to the story, but they won't spoil anything. And the one that I am bringing is the best interlude of the week, and it's called The Entertainment. And Justin, you actually had a chance to play this, right?
I did. I experienced the entertainment for myself.
So, just so I'm not, like, talking about all this exposition, do you want to tell everyone what The Entertainment is?
No. I think you should do that.
Oh, okay.
You haven't even set it up yet. It's your baby.
Sure.
I wanted
to give us...
Also, I don't think you and I agree on it, so, like, we should...
Tension.
Yeah, there's some mild tension here.
Okay, so The Entertainment is a one-act play, in which you are one of the characters, or one of the actors playing one of the characters. You are sitting at the front of the stage, and scenes are kind of happening at a bar behind you. But you can also look in all full 360 view. You can see what's happening in the wings. You can see the audience sitting in the dark. And you have the option to kind of click on things to either hear what's happening in the scenes, or you can see some stage direction that's on the table that is your performance. You can see the reviews as they are coming in by looking into the back of the theater. And it's great. I don't want to spoil what the entertainment actually is, but it's very much, I guess, an homage to kind of like the Eugene O'Neill. I know the creators say that Beckett was an inspiration, but...
Yeah, it feels like Beckett.
It feels much more... I don't think so at all. I think it feels much more like O'Neill and Miller. It's very traditional American drama.
Right. It doesn't delve into, like, absurdist. It's not Harold Pinter. Like, it's...
Yeah, and it's not even, like, existential like Beckett. You guys are
putting me into a fucking coma.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, in if you're in a coma, you're probably not going to like
it. That was the worst 15 seconds of podcast I've ever been a part of. That was fucking terrible.
We turned into another podcast just then.
We turned into a theater podcast. Here at the Besties, we talked about some many things.
Mammoth.
Good one.
Guys, I have to get my theater education.
Here's what I'll say, and I'll try not to be pretentious when I say it. It does feel like you're in a theater watching a play out, complete with, like, really cool lighting and sound design, and it's sort of an interesting, like, story that you're following along with, and it just, like, I felt, even though it's, like, literally, like, I guess 20 minutes long and free, but I was, like, totally engaged and, like, felt like I was inside the scene, which is more than I can say for a lot of, like, AAA console games.
And if you're one of the rare people who has Oculus Rift, you kind of can be inside of it because it was designed
with Oculus Rift, which is very cool as well. I mean, I honestly think, like, if you are interested in indie games at all, there's no reason why you shouldn't download it. It ran great on my MacBook Air, so you don't need a beefy computer to run it. It's, you know, experimental, but I found it way more interesting than just, like, a lot of those games that are, like, experimental and not at all fun or engaging. I think it's weird for the sake of weird.
Yeah, it's very accessible, but what Griffin is giving us shit about is, like, how you will talk about this game. It is a game that wants to be treated with, like, a certain importance, and it wants you to think and talk critically and apply, you know, an understanding of theater or anything to it. It doesn't want to be talked about, like,
I mean, it feels like, you know, whether it's theater or, like, you just left a David Lynch movie and are talking about how fucking weird it was, like, that's how
I say some pretty crazy things.
Yeah. Like, it was weird, but at the same time, conceptually, it's very clear on what it is. I mean, what you have described is, like, yes, that is what it is. It is you're pretending to be an actor in a play, and the play is going on around you. I mean, like, that's the whole bit. I think in that sense, it almost makes the mechanically, it's not surreal. I mean, it is using game mechanics, but in a fairly mundane sense. I mean, you know what they're angling for.
So is it kind of like the opera scene in Final Fantasy VI?
You're the worst. You.
It's not that far off.
Remember that scene in Hook where he hits the baseball and they're like, run home, Jack?
Yeah, yeah.
It's exactly like that.
Okay.
I don't understand. I haven't played Kentucky Route Zero, so like I'm...
I honestly believe you don't... you should play Act 1, but I don't think you need to play any of it to enjoy this or be interested in this. Just give it a shot. It is literally just 20 minutes long. I think it's not for everyone, but like, that's what you can say about everything, so whatevs.
Well, I'm curious what your issue is, Justin.
It's not my issue. I guess, like, you were so high on it, and I get it. Like, I get why, I think, but it just didn't grab me in the same way. I thought it was interesting.
Did you play the installation one, the one before this, that is about installation art? So what I really like about what they've been doing with the interludes is they're taking things that I think they have a certain expertise in, outside of video games, and they're using their jobs basically as an excuse to deconstruct those things, which is, again, we're getting into like high-minded territory here. But in the case of the entertainment, I like it because even if you don't know about theater, it's this really cool deconstruction of what goes into a production. And you are happening to be right in the middle of it, but you see, you hear the sound effects that are, you know, playing on stage, and you're used to just hearing sounds when you're playing a video game, so it doesn't mean anything. But then it explicitly states what those are. It just makes you very aware of everything that's happening to you, and that's kind of like aware of your senses, and I think that is really, really fascinating.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And something I don't expect from video games.
Yeah, I would say, like, even the characters, which are obviously, like, use that stylized, like, out-of-this-world style, because of the art design and because of the sound design and, like, the noise that they make as they walk across the stage and stuff like that, like, they felt way more real to me than, like, the pirates on my ship in Assassin's Creed 4 do. Like, they felt, like, believable and meaty, and like I was engaged. So,
and yeah, what I love so much about the entertainment and just Kentucky Route Zero 2 as a whole is when I'm playing these games, I feel like I'm in the hands of smart people who are confident in what they're saying. They're not just doing what I don't like about some indie games, where it's like an ambiguous attempt at importance, and it's like, well, this is, you know, it's a metaphor for the world, and you know, yada yada yada, and it doesn't really mean jack shit, but you can overread into it all you want.
Right.
Well, here I think it's very clear what they want you to take away from it, and I think there is room for you to bring something to it. But I think when I'm playing it, I get the sense of like, oh, they meant to do this. This was very carefully thought out.
I guess what I was saying to try to clarify my point a little bit more, I think the interesting things that it is saying is not being said by the game itself. Like, I don't think that the idea that this is a game makes it more affecting than it would be if it was just a play that I was watching. Outside the idea of, like, being in the play, but you're not actually performing in any sort of meaningful way. I mean, because of the way it's designed, your part is a pantomime, so you're still very much an observer.
Sure.
And I guess I was, if I was disappointed about something, it was the fact that I wasn't more a part of the experience.
I think that's totally fair. I guess.
But that's more maybe just more from this than it actually is.
And in that, it's even able to do on the restraints of two people who are supposed to be making another game. I do agree with you. I would say the one thing that it is able to do as a game that it couldn't do as any other medium, even being a play, is that it can give you that opportunity, and it can make that opportunity available. You know, no one's going to get a chance to have that sort of interactive art experience in, you know, rural Kentucky in real life. You know, you're not going to have this staging. If something like this even happened, you know, it would be in the MoMA, and you would have to wait online for 3 days to get a chance to do it. And that's what, again, like, same with the installation art one, is they're finding ways to bring these experiences to lots of people via video games. And that dog loves it.
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
Or is that an ambulance?
I think it's an ambulance.
Okay.
If that's a dog, fuck.
But yeah, I'm... over the past couple weeks, I just think Kentucky Route Zero is like blown up for me in terms of how great I think it is. So I'm sure there'll be something that I hope we'll be talking about a lot more on the end of the year show. If, oh my gosh, I'll save that for the end of the show.
It's halftime.
What are you guys into?
We can talk about when I got married.
You want to talk about getting wedded? I didn't know if you wanted to delve in, but so it was freezing cold in what is normally, from what I understand, pretty damn hot down there in Texas.
It was 27 degrees during my outdoor wedding, which is not ideal. Just like for human flesh, it's not the ideal temperature to like steep that shit in. It was 65 degrees that same day last year, which is pretty cool. Thanks a lot for that, Earth, I guess.
Nah, it's Obama.
Thanks a lot, Obama, for the weather, for the kindness. Yeah, it was pretty cold, you guys. Like, we all put on a brave face. Justin was there. I invited him.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
It was cold, though. You're right.
It was.
Were you tired of people talking about how cold it was?
I was like everybody else was too polite. Like, oh, it was a beautiful ceremony. Like, thanks, it was. But like, my dick is gone. my dick shattered into crystalline shards.
Wow.
So was this like a last minute? Well, obviously you knew it was going to be cold that week, but like, is there tension leading up to it? Like, what are we going to do?
Yes, yeah, so the venue is great because they gave us like a tent and a bunch of heaters and fire pits and stuff. And like once we got into that like heat zone,
yeah,
we created like a little sanctuary of warmth. That was really nice. But like during the ceremony and when we were taking pictures and anytime you got outside of that perimeter, it was dick shatteringly cold.
Yeah,
it was pretty miserable. Thankfully, we had a real short ceremony because. Nobody likes a long ceremony.
Yeah.
And then we had an open bar, so that helped to keep people warm, I think.
Damn straight.
All things considered, I guess I'd call it like the wedding of the century.
Does it feel, since you've been working on this wedding for a year or so now, does it feel like you took a ginormous poop?
It does both figuratively and literally.
You did.
I don't really want to talk about that, really.
Dying. So,
do you guys want to know anything else about being married?
Yeah, how is it?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Do you want any tips about keeping it fresh?
I will say this about from a gamer's perspective, because that's all we do here. It's giving it from a gamer's perspective. It makes it hard to WASD with this ring on my finger.
Oh, no.
It's getting in the way of, like, my usual like digital movements that I'm like super used to doing.
Such a humble brag.
What?
I'm having trouble playing my keyboard. What with this ginormous wedding ring on in my sense of bliss.
First of all, I don't think dudes get to brag about like.
Did you get a massive size rock on that thing? She hook you up?
Yeah, man. She done me good. It's tough. Like playing guitar, like that career of mine is like fucking over, because you just can't do it anymore.
It feels that way now. I promise you, and I mean, plan will probably back me up. You will get used to it.
Eventually, yeah. You correct to it, right? Like it just becomes
part of your finger.
It's like when a star pitcher, you know, breaks his shoulder or something like that, and then he has to like pitch around the pain. That's sort of where I'm at. Like. My StarCraft 2 APMs have like plummeted, and it's my pinky and ring finger just keep like tripping all over each other.
Have you considered wearing the ring around your neck like Nathan Drake?
I thought about doing that, but then I realized how very, very silly that would look.
Yeah.
Just how completely silly it would look.
Because you really would need the skin tight like waffle shirt and like the shoulder holster to like make the look set off.
What did you call it?
Skin tight waffle shirt.
Yeah. That's something.
You know, like one of those thermals.
Man, I wish I had a shirt made of waffles.
Man, me too. Anyway, let's talk about another video game. I'm sick of bragging about being married. It is really great, though. If you have the means, I highly recommend it.
We can talk about my game.
Hit me. I'm ready.
So my game is actually came out, I think, a few months ago. but oh. I didn't play it because it wasn't on Mac. And then when it came to Mac, I didn't play it for a while because I was busy. And then Steam had their little sale thing, and they sold a bunch of games for really cheap, and I bought two games during that sale. One of them was Rogue Legacy, which we've already talked about on the show.
Yummy, yummy.
Delicious game. It's a delight. And then the other one is a game called Teleglitch Die More Edition. Presumably there was a Teleglitch before this one edition. But interestingly enough, they're both roguelikes, but handle rogueliking in different ways. So Teleglitch is a top-down shooter. Picture it like a dual-stick shooter, if you will. But the maps are randomly generated. The items are sort of scattered around the map randomly. And it plays almost like a top-down Doom insofar as, like, it's very tense and scary. And ammo is very limited. And you're sort of just creeping around this world trying to survive and shoot dudes. And you find items and weapons, and there's actually a whole, like, weapon crafting system. So if you find, like, two tubes and a M-chip, you can make, like, a boss shotgun.
Let me stop you here. What's your, like, best? Like, what's this the best of?
This is the best... What did I... I don't remember what I wrote in the email. Something...
You wrote, this is the best reason to reload.
Oh, yeah, best reason to reload. Okay, good. Thank you for reminding me. So this is the best reason to reload because... It is one of those games where, like, reloading is a big part of the, like, you could get screwed over because reloading, like, takes a noted amount of time. And because it's so difficult and because it's a roguelike, if you die, you get sent back to the very beginning. So that moment that you have where it's like, oh, did I reload? Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I just got eaten by a goblin is far more intense than it would be if it was just like, oh, whatever, I'll load that quick save. Piece of cake.
Isn't that creating, like, artificial drama, like, because...
I mean, you can say that about any roguelike, really.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it's artificial. I think it just encourages precision and the learning of the mechanics each time you play. Like, it's... Like, I'm not upset when I have to... Well, I am a little bit upset, but I'm not bothered by having to replay a level over again because it's about mastering. It's like Spelunky. Remember Spelunky? Remember that game that we talked about? Either. I know you didn't. Oh,
the greatest game of the generation?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the genre. If you don't like roguelikes, if you don't like starting from scratch and, like, having the satisfaction of, like, learning the mechanics slowly but surely until you're, like, an absolute god at them, you probably won't like this game. It is called Die More Edition, so you will die a lot. It's very, very difficult. Perhaps too difficult. I think even I, a lover of really difficult games, think this game is probably a little too difficult.
Thank you for not saying rushed at Game Master, like we all assumed you would.
But, yeah, it's it really, like, it feels tense in the way that, like, a lot of first-person shooters don't anymore. This isn't a first-person shooter, it's a top-down game. But in that, like, throwback feeling of, like, when you were first playing Doom and you had, like, two shotgun bullets... and a fucking fireball-throwing imp came out the door, and you freaked out, like, it has that same vibe. You know that vibe? Have you lived that vibe?
I do. Is there any, like, level of persistence? Like, when you die?
So actually...
That's essential to enjoying a roguelike.
There is some minor persistence in that if you get to level, like, 3... Or, I'm sorry, if you get to level 5... Every time you start, if you want to skip right to level 3, you can do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It puts you at a minor disadvantage because you don't have, like, as much equipment as you would have if you had played through from the beginning. But that's sort of the level of persistence. There's also, like, as you play, you, like, get... You learn schematics, like, how to build certain weapons. And that is tracked in a database. Okay. So you can, like, look at the database.
Kind of Spelunky-esque.
Yeah, Spelunky-esque.
Like, in Spelunky, you unlock shortcuts to other levels, yep. But by the time you get there, like, you don't have the cape or whatever.
Yeah. It was an interesting take on a roguelike, one that I hadn't... You know, it feels like everyone, like, Rogue Legacy took on the Castlevania genre and, like, added roguelike-y stuff. Binding of Isaac was like a Legend of Zelda style.
Right. I like that as like a side dish. I like roguelike elements on the side, not when they are like the complete fucking focus of the game. Like,
but do you think that's what Splunky is?
Kind of, but I like Splunky. So maybe that thing I just said was
dumb.
So
there you go. Boom.
It's a, I never got deep into FTL because I just found it too punishing. Like, I got super invested, and like I understand why it built tension, and I guess the game was good about doing that, better than most. But man, oh man, did it make me not really want to play the game again after I had a few really good runs that just ended in tragedy.
I think those games, like, you have to not want to win in a certain degree. Like, if that makes any sense. I enjoyed FTL even when I lost. I never really thought that I would beat it. So I just had fun kind of seeing how far I could get.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm deranged.
And I will say, whenever you feel that way about a game and then you do manage to finally beat it, I beat Spelunky for the first time this year, and it was the goddamn greatest accomplishment of my entire life. So, like,
yep.
If you can stick with it, it pays off, but I rarely am able to.
Okay.
Who's last?
Me.
I'd like
to talk with you gentlemen about my game. It is a professional game made by a person... I do not know the developer, his Christian name, I'm not aware of, but the game is called The Novelist.
Made by Kent Hudson.
Kent Hudson, that's a good name. So, The Novelist is a game in which you're a spirit of some sort living
like
in a house.
Like wine or booze?
You're a spirit of some sort that's living, has occupied a house that a family moves into for the summer. The family is the titular novelist, his wife, and their son, Tommy, who's 5. And as the spirit, you, in each chapter, the game spans a summer at this resort house, basically. A vacation home of sorts. Each chapter spans a week in their lives. The way it plays out is that each week there is a dilemma of some sort. There is some problem. Each person has sort of their own approach to the issue, to the problem, and sometimes the problems aren't related. Like in one chapter, the novelist... Dan, I think is his name. Dan wants more time to work on his novel. And his wife, Linda, wants the family to eat together. And their son, you know, maybe wants to go to the amusement park or something. As the spirit, you wander around this house looking for clues as to what the characters want. Sometimes those take the form of, like, diary entries. Sometimes they take the form of paintings or notes that they've left. And you can also climb into the memories of each of the people in the house and see their memories that sort of influence their decision making and what they want. And you, as the spirit, make a decision as to what path they're going to take, who's basically going to win and get what they want in the family. And you can also secondarily choose a compromise, which is sort of like a half-hearted attempt at what one of the family members wants. And then one person is just getting left out in the cold, not getting anything they want. And as you make these decisions, the story of the family sort of changes and evolves to shape around how you've guided them. So as the spirit, there's sort of a parallel between the spirit and a novelist in its own right, who's sort of choosing the way a story unfolds and which characters win and which characters lose. There's actually two very different methods of playing the game. In one, you're free to walk around the house at your leisure, and
more like float, right?
Well, yeah, actually float. You can zip between light fixtures to get around the house more quickly. In the other mode is stealth, where the members of the family can see you. So you have to be careful about how you go around the house and how you avoid their eyes. And Usually that's zipping between light fixtures again. But you can also make the light fixtures flicker to distract them so you can get something if you want to. I didn't play that way. I just played the story mode. I don't think that this would necessarily be served. I went back and checked out a little bit playing stealth. I didn't particularly enjoy it, mainly because the loading times are pretty long for when you get caught by a member of the family. You're sort of set back a bit, and there's a bit of a load. I called it the most the best educational game of the week, and I think that the thing that surprised me most about The Novelist, it's definitely, you know, an art game, whatever that means. It's not traditional mechanics by any stretch of the imagination. But what's very interesting about it is that I, in my own life, have to a lot of times choose between work and family and keep those two balanced. And The Novelist was surprisingly, like, super helpful in helping me to sort of, like, a nice exercise in seeing in other people's perspectives, because it's so rare that in any sort of entertainment, you actually are that aware of motivations for three different people, conflicting motivations, and you are deciding what is the most worthwhile.
Can you win or lose? Can you make it to, like, the end of the game and, like, your whole family's gone? Or can you make it to the end of the game and, like, your book is, like, shitty?
Well, yes. I mean, you there are many, many different outcomes depending on how much and in what degrees and in what situations individual people win and lose in certain scenarios.
And it's not binary. Like, some scenario, like, so each of these is broken up into, like, days. And some days the decision is, you know, it's important but not super important, but there are other days where, like, the decision you make will have a major impact. And the days are randomly organized each time you play them. So if you played it, you would not have the same order of days that Justin had. So you don't really know when an important day is coming, nor does it really alert you that it's an important day.
It is very much about just deciding how these characters' lives play out. There's not a win-lose scenario in a traditional sense because you are controlling the destinies of three people. And actually, the only thing that I wasn't crazy about is the game has this sort of weirdly... there's a weirdly patriarchal overtone to it because you are making a decisions that for this entire family... But the way you pass your decision on is you whisper into Dan, the novelist, you whisper into his ear while he's sleeping, which gives the implication that, like, Dan is making these massive decisions, you know, for his entire family. I would have liked it a little bit better, I think, if the spirit or whatever had whispered, like, to the couple, so it didn't put this focus on Dan, because I think by making, aside from the patriarchal overtones, I think by tying you to Dan as your sort of avatar in the world, it makes the decisions feel more like a win and lose, depending on the fate of his book.
I really enjoyed it. And I think what I found surprising about it was at the end, I wasn't happy with one of the results. I things didn't go very well for the son, and while I was not happy about it, it was also fair. Like, I made decisions that I thought were appropriate, and I felt horrible that things didn't work out for the kid. But it was weird because it seemed to show what I guess my priorities right now are as, like, someone, a young married person.
Absolutely. Like, I absolutely definitely feel the same way.
The idea of that couple being happy.
But I was focused on that, I think, over. And I think that I wonder if I'll go back and play it, you know, once I have a kid, if my, you know, priorities would shift as I was playing it. Because the wife's arc is sort of about her happiness with her husband. There's a part of it satisfaction with herself, but they make it very clear that those two are tied together for her. He is part of what's making her feel like, you know, and caring for their son is part of what's sort of robbing her life of some sense of satisfaction. So, like, I was sort of biased towards helping their relationship, but I think a lot of that is just about where I am in my life right now.
The reason I'm having a hard time, I guess, connecting with this is these types of elements have been in games before, and I never ever approached them with what kind of person am I and how do these decisions reflect on my real life. It is always from a very mechanical, like, what is going to get me to the ending that I think I'm going to like the most. And you saying that I can't wait to go back and play it once I have a kid, like, then are you just going to play it trying to get the good kid ending? Like,
no, I was really going by my honest, like, in the scenario. I'll give you an example, okay? So in one of the scenarios, your wife's grandmother dies. Dan's wife's grandmother dies. Linda, her grandmother dies. And the decision is Dan's publishers want him to go on this book tour, and it directly conflicts with Linda. And you know that if you go with her to the funeral, then it's going to hurt the book. If you work on the book instead of with her, then you are going to impact your relationship. And then Tommy, the kid, he wants something banal. I don't know. He wants, like, to play it in the sand or something.
Kids.
I know, right? So you make it. So in that situation, I thought, like, okay, well, Linda should get the points here. She should be the one who that seems much more important to me. But then working on the book, but like a book tour would be a really huge promotional opportunity. The other part of it is I don't know what happened directly before that. So maybe I arbitrarily made the decision to have Linda win in the last day. And then in this day, like, I definitely want her to win. And that can really set up some bad patterns that can, like, really impact the outcome. And I was honestly and it makes you pay. When you don't, like, for instance, in that situation, for example, you get, like, a little epilogue as to how there's a section that it writes in a fictional book about sort of what that character did as a result of the decision. And, like, in that one, Tommy, the kid, plays by himself and is sad that he can't go to the beach and they make this specific detail. He tries to make a ramp for his cars with the shovel from his bucket, but the shovel is too light and it doesn't work.
Oh.
And he doesn't. I know, right? It's like brutal. The biggest bummer. And that's the only mechanical.
I thought you were going to say, like, scorpions came out of the bucket.
Scorpions come out. Yeah. And that's the only mechanical input. I mean, there is no mechanical attachment. It's just about, like, crafting a story and shaping a story and how you want to see it play out.
And to Griffin's point that this has been in most games, the problem is it's always, you know, supplementing other games. Like, this is the game.
Yeah, and most games, you'd make a decision, and it'd be like, okay, you're going to make this decision, and now you'll get plus 15 gold.
Well, no. Like how it's horseshit in, like, Old Republic, for example. Like, it's not a real emotional decision I'm making, because what I want is lightning. Like, I want lightning to shoot on my hand. So, I'll kill a baby.
There are examples. I think the Walking Dead games are a pretty good example of this. But, like, the point I was trying to make is that it's not coming from a place of, like, personal morality. It's coming from a place of, like, oh, I really like this one character. So, whenever I get to a decision about whether or not they live or die, I'm gonna do the live one, just because that's the story that I want to tell. Yeah. And, like, that, for me, that sort of depletes this idea of it being a reflection of the type of person that I am, because to me the type of person I am is like the guy who likes Gary. Like, just doesn't.
So maybe if the stakes are not live or die, they're just like, well, you're just living in a house with people, that sort of removes that impetus, and you're really just, like, making decisions for how you would deal with that situation in real life.
And
to always choose one character, it is not, like, you will not do that. It is set up so emotionally.
Watch,
like,
me. You haven't met Gary. He fucking rules.
You will not, like, it is not designed so you, like, Dan wins all the time. Like, Dan wins all the time, and I don't know what would happen. Brutal.
I'll play with Gary in his sandbox. He didn't even want to do that. He's a grown-ass man, but I'll do it anyway. Get in a sandbox with me, Gary. It's a blast. We'll use our hands. Don't worry about the shovel.
It's like $14. I think it might even be on sale for like $12. It's on Mac and PC.
You know who made it is more of those 2K Marin devs. The 2K Marin dream lives on as the studio that would go on to make amazing, innovative IPs, just not actually
just
at
not
2K Marin.
At that particular company.
The play testers for this is like a who's who of game development. It's like crazy the big names that he has on like his like these people. He also has a section where he thanks parents for talking with him about the experience of raising a child in the credits. We're like wanting to get what that dynamic is right, which is I think speaks a lot to like what kind of game this is. Because you really I think the thing, Griffin, that you don't realize until you play it is like it doesn't feel like you're making story beat decisions to try to get to an outcome. It's really much more compartmentalized than that. Like you make very small decisions and hope that you can find a balance where everybody is happy or is at least, you know, moderately well off. And I think if you're playing with that, like that is the goal, the unstated goal, that you are working towards, and that's what makes it so difficult, I think, is because you are playing with like it, not about this character is going to win, but how can I make it so at the end of the day everyone's as happy as they can be, and once you're playing it with that and you're making like real decisions about what that means for you, like what in an impossible decision where no one's going to be happy, making those kinds of decisions is really interesting, and I think genuinely gave me more perspective into making those decisions in my own life, which, you know, name me the number of games that do that.
Six
games.
Yeah.
Check it out on Wikipedia. He's right.
So who won?
That sounds interesting.
I know I didn't fucking win.
I would give it to Justin.
Yeah, his
yeah, team's... Yeah, that was a good argument. I like that.
I'm gonna check out this game now. You sold me on it, Justin. You sold me on the morality of sand.
I hope I get a kick. I hope I get a kickback.
Everyone, I guess, hold on to your assholes for next week.
Yeah. So we're gonna. I think it's time we should talk about what's gonna go down.
Okay, I'm ready.
We're gonna. Jam,
I'd like to. I'd like to know.
We're gonna jam firecrackers up everyone's assholes and blow them clean away.
You guys might realize or might already know that we haven't been picking a best game of the week all year. Did you notice that? I noticed it. Despite that, we've all sort of discussed it, and we have quite a swath of games that we consider to be the best games of the year, and we're going to pit them against one another, but that doesn't mean you don't get to be involved, because we're letting you, the listener, vote on the final four games to be included. Right now we have a link up on polygon.com lists the 12 games that we picked, and then you readers can write in the comments
please vote. Jeebus Creebus, don't vote for the 12 games that we already picked.
Yeah, that's
guys
tremendously dumb. If you do that, your vote will be thrown
your
into
vote
a
will be
volcano.
Destroyed. You will be disenfranchised. Vote for
but the
vote for
the
submission.
Idea is that we would have an awesome series of submissions from folks and we could fill out that final four.
Don't vote for Bioshock Infinite either, because like everybody has done that. That one's probably okay. I don't know why it wasn't in the top 12 already.
This isn't a top 12, to be clear. These are our 12 finalists, but they're
not in any order.
You never know how the bracketing is going to shake out. Some of these might do all right.
Yeah. Do you want to read the list?
Sure.
What we have already.
The last.
I'm curious.
The Last of Us.
Last of Us.
The Last of Us, Grand Theft Auto V, Towerfall, Tearaway, Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds, Rogue Legacy, Brothers, Super Mario 3D World, Assassin's Creed Floor, Gone Home, Saints Row Floor, and Tomb Raider, 2013 edition.
There's definitely some biggies that are missing from there. I know Animal Crossing's not in there. Yeah. Bioshock, as you mentioned.
If that list angers you in any way,
and it has apparently, angered everyone already. We did a shitty job.
People are furious.
Did this go up?
It's up. Yeah, it's up.
And people are furious. And the only way to ensure that your voice is heard is to write in all capital letters in bold what game you think should be on that list.
And call all four of us idiots. Even though I definitely think BioShock should have been on this list, I'm right there with you guys. I don't want to throw the other three people on this podcast under the bus, but heave ho! There you go. Those are the tires going over your bodies.
Oh, ouch! Oh,
no. Only in this universe. Don't worry, there's another dimension where it didn't happen.
Yeah. So you may be asking what we're going to do with this list. The answer is we are going to do a massive two-part video edition of the Besties Game of the Year, similar to what we did last year. This year will be even better, and we're going to duke it out. Sweet 16 bracket style, so that's something to look forward to as well. The first episode of that will be up on December 23rd.
Are we doing both of them on like the Christmas week?
No, the last one will go up on the 30th.
Okay,
so cool. It's going to be a week gap, so people will be dying to know what our picks are.
Exciting.
Psyched.
This is also exciting. So, catch it. Catch the fever.
Cool. Everyone get excited. And
where can they go vote?
Plant, where can they go vote?
They can go vote on polygon.com at that blog post, which you can find at the top of polygon.com right now. Or, you know what? We will throw a link in the Besties episode article so you can vote there.
Perfect. Okay, thank you all so much for joining us for the Besties. We hope you've had some fun and hope it didn't get too highfalutin for you. You know, when you get a few brainiacs like us on the same show, it tends to get a little snooty. So I hope you were able to keep up with all of our hit references. And
it was really like Picasso at the Lapin Agile today. It was kind of a rough one for me because, like, I don't know shit.
You just don't know things.
Steve Martin reference?
Yeah, that's more. I thought that was more accessible, you know, like King Tut, you know, like people get that shit and they love it. Now I'm your watch. That's another Steve Martin reference from the hit film Shop Girl.
That's good.
You remember that scene? You remember that scene when fucking Claire Danes is like, my watch is gone, and he holds her wrist. He's like, now I'm your watch. It's like Steve Martin, fucking don't gross barf forever. Buckets of barf.
Yeah, the link will be in the post for this podcast.
Now I'm your shoe. And he wraps himself around her foot.
His entire mouth around your foot.
Uh-huh. I'm a shoe. Oh, no, I'm a foot.
Oh, no, boy.
Now I'm your backpack. Get off me, Steve Martin.
I'm a wild crazy guy. Get out of here.
Get out of here, you
weirdo. Anyway, that's going to do it for us of the Besties. Make sure you join us again on December 23rd. Apparently, I don't know. I guess we won't have a regular ass episode next week, or God, I hope.
I mean,
not.
it'll go up audio also on the 23rd. So if you want to listen, you can do that as well. But why would you do that? You have eyes, yeah. Unless you're blind, in which case I'm sorry.
All right,
cheery note. That's gonna do it for us on the Besties. Make sure to join us again next time for the Besties. You know, send the world's best friends, pick the world's best things.
Besties!